Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new series of the Nature Friendly Farming Network podcast with me, Will Evans, and my fellow farming podcaster, Ben Eagle. In the last two series of the show, we've spoken to farmers from the network from across all four nations about their businesses and the work they're doing to tackle the climate crisis and the nature crisis. And don't forget, you can go back and listen to all those episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts. But in this series, we're focusing on NWFN's latest report and campaign, which is called Rethink Farming, a practical guide for farming, nature and climate. We'll be meeting farmers and others to talk about the various aspects of the report, from soil to water and biodiversity to carbon management. Ben, what are we doing today? Who's on the show? Which makes me sound as if you do all the organising, which you do, to be fair.
That is a very good question, Will. Also, it is really good to be back. Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to introduce the report and its various aspects, and definitely recommend listeners that you do have a look at it as you're going through the podcast series. And we are joined today by a Suffolk farmer, who is one half of the Barker Boys. Patrick Barker is on the show. But before we get on to Patrick, what are you most looking forward to from this series?
Well, first of all, I'm looking forward to working with the smoothest man in podcasting again, which is, of course, your good self, Benjamin. But it's also the great challenge of our age for us as farmers is to produce safe and healthy food whilst running profitable businesses and also having a minimal or even hopefully positive effect on the environment around us. But yeah, that can be quite daunting. How do we reduce our individual carbon emissions? How do we cut our reliance on chemical inputs, etc.? But in the first two series of the podcast, we talked to people who are actually doing that right now. And I learned a lot from them as a farmer. And I'm looking forward to learning more in series three and sharing the amazing work they're doing with a wider audience.
Yeah, I think for me that's a large part of it. It's just sort of hearing from people who are really doing positive work, and it was very optimistic, which is good, especially at times like this where it can sometimes feel like there's a lot to think about. Really excited to delve into the report and see where this series goes. Patrick, welcome to the show, and thanks for starting us off. Never an easy task, as I'm sure that the first guests on other series have found. Before we talk about Rethink Farming, can you introduce yourself and your farm to the listeners?
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Thank you, Will. Yeah, my name is Patrick Barker. I'm an arable farmer and conservationist here in central Suffolk. We farm 545 hectares of our own land. And we're on proper heavy old clay, like real goes really hard in the summer and sticks to your boots in the winter clay. Growing cereals, just your wheat, barley, oilseed rape and spring beans, sometimes linseed, depending on how the rotation falls. And our main specialist break crop is actually ryegrass, so herbage ryegrass for seed. We've been on this farm since 1957 when grandfather bought it. So my cousin Brian and I were the third generation of Barkers to be farming this farm. And for us, the conservation and the farmland wildlife has always been a really important part of what we're trying to do and the way we go about our daily business. You know, every decision we make has a consideration for the natural environment. And we've kind of always sort of prided ourselves on actually being able to work and find that balance between real profitable intensive arable farming, but also having a massive yield of wildlife. And yield of wildlife is something that I always talk about, but it's about having a farm that's just bursting at the seams with wildlife. And you know, you're kind of tripping over it. You can't really miss it when you come here. And that's really what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. And how did you get involved with the network, first of all? Because I think you've been involved quite a while.
Yeah, actually, I was invited to go to the State of Nature launch in 2016 and sat there in the audience, listening to the panel talking about how stewardship schemes hadn't worked, ELS hadn't worked, farming was the cause of all these problems, that species are still declining. And I was I was a bit put out by that because I felt that what we'd done was really starting to pay dividends and we could show that all these things were working. And I then turned around to the nearest person to me and started complaining. And as it turned out, he was a farmer. And he said, I agree with you. We're doing these things. I cut my hedges in the winter to make sure they're still full of berries. And I said, well, so do we. And I said, we're doing this. And he said, so do I. And it turned out it was Martin Lyons. And at that point, he said to me, he said, I've got something in the pipeline that I think you might be interested in. And from that kind of moment on, we became quite good friends. And as soon as the opportunity arose for me to join the steering committee of the England Nature Friendly Farming Network, I kind of jumped to that chance and haven't looked back, really. I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed being involved, met some fantastic people, got the opportunity to go and sit on one of the panels at the Oxford Real Farming Conference as well on behalf of the network. So for me, it's been really good to be involved with like-minded people. But at the same time, it's really helped my development as well, because getting in with those types of people and looking at the work that's going on everywhere else has really helped me in my kind of my daily life and my agricultural career as well.
So you're a leaf demonstration farm and an AHDB strategic farm as well. For listeners who perhaps might not be aware of those, can you explain what that means and in particular what it means on your farm?
We entered the Farmers Weekly Awards in 2010 and we were fortunate enough to win the Countryside Farmers of the Year Award. And Caroline Drummond, who's the chief executive of Leaf, was one of the judges. And as we were going around, she said to us, she said, look, you're doing absolutely everything that our organisation, kind of wants farmers to do. Come and join us. And we talked a lot with Caroline and talked about what we were doing and what we wanted to do. And she said, you know, we want you to be part of what we do. So we then became a leaf demonstration farm, and we've been flying the flag for leaf ever since. Then at the same time, Brian wanted to start engaging all the farmers in the area. He found there was younger farmers in the area who were keen to learn, keen to develop. So he actually created his own discussion group. And that was actually really successful. Lots of interesting speakers and just farmers getting together once a month on a Friday morning and talking about farming and the issues, and actually kind of breaking down some of those walls or hedges as they are in farming, you know, just getting people talking. And that was the time when the HGCA, as it was then, launched their Monitor Farm Network. And Brian said, look, this is something I really want to go for. I think it'll follow on really well from our discussion group. And the HGCA then became the AHDB. The Monitor Farm program was rolled out, and we were one of the monitor farms for 3 years. And then when our 3 years was up, there was so much good stuff going on here. It's all about farmer-led knowledge exchange. So it was taking all those things that people think, I wonder if that'll work, and finding a farm to do it on, which was actually us, and getting the scientists to look at for things like, you know, how do we define marginal land and can we be reducing our inputs without affecting our yield? So the strategic farm was kind of born out of the monitor farm program. So we signed up for 6 years. And we've had hundreds of people visit the farm, lots of farmers coming and looking at what's going on, and lots of people giving ideas of actually things that we should be trying, and everything looking forwards in farming and working out what the future might look like, and kind of trying to blaze a bit of a trail in terms of, you know, can we make life easier for ourselves in the future? And that's been the real benefit of being a strategic farm.
Fantastic. Okay, let's turn to Rethink Farming. The report highlights how nature-based solutions can help raise our climate and biodiversity ambitions in seven areas where farming is key: soil, water, biodiversity, carbon management, landscape approaches, food quality, and prosperity. And we're going to look at all of these throughout the series, but what are some of the things that you've taken away from the report, Patrick?
I think the most important thing for me is it just gives you that kind of confidence that there's loads of actually other farmers out there wanting to do the same thing and succeeding in doing it. You know, we know what the direction of travel is for agriculture. DEFRA have been very clear on that. You know, we've had an agriculture bill, we've got an environment bill coming. There's the 25-year environment plan, which was published. You know, it's very well set on what we should be doing. So the Rethink Farming report actually just shows all those people how they're doing it. And for me, it's almost a kind of unofficial handbook of what farming for the environment into the future looks like. And that's, you know, that's not just England, that's across the whole of the UK as well. And there's plenty that we can learn from, you know, crofters in Scotland on how they manage their grassland You know, some of those terrific farms in Wales that we think, oh, you know, it's all hills, and they're growing crops, and they've got fantastic you know, bird life and everything else. So I, you know, it's just a bit of a blueprint on what is possible.
Yeah. Oh well, yeah, and speaking of what is possible, I suppose, COP26 has recently come to a close, as we all know.
I thought you were going to talk about your own farm there, Will.
No,
a flagship.
I'm trying, Ben, as you know. But Patrick, what is your take on COP, and how optimistic are you? I mean, a lot of noise came out of COP, but how optimistic are you that we are doing enough, both as an industry and as a country as a whole?
Last Friday, we were invited to the Suffolk Creating the Greenest County Awards, which actually coincided with the last day of COP. And we had the best afternoon looking at everything good that is going on from an environmental point of view in Suffolk. And it was actually really nice to see all the people who are doing good things instead of just talking about them. So, you know, things like, you know, litter-free Felixstowe, and there's some of the Suffolk Wildlife Trust reserves, and actually just listening to people talking about COP and, oh, this is what we're going to do. But then seeing all these people who were doing it actually kind of just brought it home that actually, you know, there is a lot of good stuff going on out there, but we do need the policies. We need all these people in a conference center to be actually, you know, signing on the dotted line, because we have to set the standards that we have to work to. Otherwise, we're not going to get anywhere. And we're trying to turn around the huge juggernaut. We're trying to turn around the biggest thing that's probably we've ever done as a race, which is make a mess of our planet. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, we're trying to undo hundreds of years of bad things, really. And for me, from farming, it's the same. You know, if you've set an ambition to be net zero by 2040, you know, it sounds a long way away, but we've actually got to be all doing our bit, working in that direction to try and achieve this. And I think we all look at the telly and we think, oh, it's someone else's problem. But actually, all we really need to do is look at our own farms and our own land and our own businesses, and it all fits together. You know, we can all be out there to try to reduce our spray usage, our fertilizer usage. We can make sure that we've got habitats that are really delivering for everything. And if we all start doing more, then I think we'll be heading in the right direction.
So, I mean, Patrick, can you give a few examples of some of the work that you and Brian are doing on your farm?
For us, our real strength is the sum of all the parts. You know, there's no one thing in particular that we're doing that I say, this is what we hang our hats on, this is what's going to save the world. But actually, when we start putting together our reduced tillage system and increasing soil health, you know, one of our metrics for success now is earthworms per spadeful instead of tons per acre. When we start adding into that cover crops and catch crops, looking at how we take residual nitrogen out of the soil so it's actually not going into the watercourses. When we look at reduced inputs, we look at how we're reducing our fertilizer and our spray chemicals, floristic margins, which is promoting our beneficial insects, our beneficial predatory insects, you know, and keep that, line that up with our controlled traffic, yield mapping, a really well put together countryside stewardship scheme, taking marginal land out of production, and real attention to detail to habitats and wildlife. Really, it's that whole picture. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create a whole farm ecosystem. So I want the crops to be really doing as much as they can for the farmland wildlife. And I want the non-farmed areas to actually be benefiting our farmland crops. One of the things that we've kind of been looking at is actually, can we farm like environmentalists and manage the environment like farmers? And what I mean by that is, you know, can we be looking at all our crops, making sure we've got flowering crops for pollination, making sure we've got a soil health that benefits our kind of across the whole farming system, but then at the same time we go into all our habitats and we manage them to get the maximum yield for wildlife, so we are getting as much out of every habitat every year for our farmland wildlife as we can.
And in terms of benefits, what are the benefits that you're seeing?
The benefits are countless, really. I have to say, you know, we haven't seen a decrease in yield. One of the things that all the farmers chuck at us, oh, your yields will fall away.
Yeah,
you know, we've maintained our average yields, but actually our cost of production has plummeted. You know, we're not moving, I think previously we were moving something like 5 million tons of soil a year, and now in September we kind of look around at each other a bit saying, shouldn't we be doing something? You know, the savings are incredible when it comes to fuel usage and time on a seat. You know, we're not spraying, we're not using any insecticides at all. I think we've used an insecticide once in 6 years, and that was because we had a sawfly outbreak in a crop of mustard. Everything else is just, it's getting towards that balance. You know, when the NIAB scientists and Dr. Aoife O'Driscoll, especially when she comes here, she kind of waxes lyrical about there's beetles everywhere, there's butterflies, and just everywhere you look, there's something going on. And we see that because we see that every day, and we're in danger of that becoming the new norm for us. But at the same time, it's appreciating that this, you know, the farm is kind of moving and it's alive all the time because there's just so much wildlife here. And there's other species here that I use as kind of metrics for success as well. And our grey partridge numbers, we've gone from having 3 pairs to over 22 breeding pairs over the farm in the last, you know, that's only increased since 2016. We put about 9 years worth of work into not a lot of progress, and all of a sudden then everything matured at once and the partridge numbers went through the roof. We've had barn owls breeding here every year since 2012. You know, for me, barn owls are a really good indicator of the strength of the habitat of our grassland. You know, if we've got barn owls breeding, then we know we've got a really good population of short-tailed voles, common shrews, field mice. And I know all those things are there because we open up the barn owl pellets with the school kids and we find them. you know, so kind of just linking this all together, you know, we're adding butterfly species and dragonfly species to our counts and our surveying every year. You know, we've added willow emerald damselflies and we've added clouded yellow butterflies this year. And during lockdown, you know, when there was less to do, I got into moth trapping. And I used to say trapping, probably for the environmentalists, we call it trapping. For everyone else, it's a recording because we're actually letting them go at the end of it. But I added 260 new species to the farm list, which were just moths.
Gee whiz.
And for me, that data recording is really important as well, because we've always said if we're going to be in stewardship schemes, we need to be able to demonstrate they work. And at the start of our HLS scheme, we said, look, we're taking this money. It's public money. We need to show that this money is going to good use. So when I look back on it now, I think we actually coined and invented public money for public goods, because that was kind of the main thing that we were looking at. But by doing all this data recording, it just gives us the opportunity to show what we're doing and how it works. And we started off with some barn owl boxes in the Southern Community Barn Owl Project. And Steve Petrosky came out and ringed some kestrel chicks. And kestrels are breeding in one of these boxes. And I found that so fascinating that I actually trained to be a ringer myself. So I've been a bird ringer now for 12 years. And bird ringing is the way I can really quantify what we're doing. You know, it's really hard to quantify success in terms of like a wild bird seed mix. Yeah. But actually, no, if I go out over a whole winter and we ring 500 new yellowhammers that winter, that means they've had a belting breeding season. I know they don't travel very far because we have birds moving from farm to farm and they don't really go very far at all. And being able to quantify that now is something that you know, gives us real purpose to what we're doing and just gives us the opportunity to show that what we're doing works.
Your note from that, Will, and I've the pleasure of knowing the Barkers for a few years now, but it's that real combination of knowledge and experience as well that Patrick and Brian have, which is why I think they're such a strong team.
For sure, definitely. It was nice that you mentioned yellowhammers there, because I saw a few the other day here and I haven't seen any for a while, so that made me feel that maybe I'm doing something right as well. Why do you think, Patrick, it's important that NWFN puts together reports and campaigns like this?
We just have to keep up the pressure on showing that there is a way of farming that can benefit the natural environment and actually can deliver us the good quality, wholesome food that we want. You know, it's not as simple as that sentence, but if we're all working towards that and we're all running businesses that actually are viable in the long term, we are, you know, we're doing everything over the whole landscape, which is it's producing food, but not to the detriment of the natural environment. It's making sure that we've got farmland wildlife, but not to the not to the detriment of our crop yields, our food yields. You know, it's up to us as an organization to show that, you know, this is possible. This balance can be found. And actually, we can also do that by being one of the solutions to climate change. Now, there's things that we can do if we're reducing our grazing numbers and we are all eating better produced lamb and beef. You know, we can actually be part of the solution to mitigation against flooding and type of that. So it's just it's an organisation that can just show that all this can be linked together, and you know it's there for us to show what we're doing and other people maybe just to want to come on the journey with us.
Yeah, no, definitely agree. So who's the report for, do you think? Is it for farmers? Is it for policymakers? Is it for the public, or is it for all three? Is it for everyone?
I mean, this report is for everyone. Everyone who has an interest, you know, and it's more than just farmers and policymakers. It's, you know, it's people who actually are buying food. You know where your food comes from. Yeah. Appreciate that. Actually, if you're going to spend a bit of money on food, you know, let's have a bit of lamb that's come grass fed from a farm with high environmental standards. You know, let's not be shipping meat all over the world or soybeans all over the world. Or, you know, if we're going to go down a different dietary route, let's have it local as well. You know, and I think just the policymakers need to be thinking like consumers and like farmers. The farmers need to be thinking like policymakers. And I think it's up to all of us to show a report like this. It's just that, you know, there is a way out there that isn't that hard. It doesn't break the bank. Actually, we might all be better off as a result of it.
Patrick, I'm guessing you're interacting with your neighbours. How do you find is the best way to engage neighbouring farmers?
I've been involved with the Suffolk Community Barnout Project for over 10 years now. And for me, I get so much pleasure from going out on my neighbours' farms with the farmers who have gone to the effort of, gone to the effort of listening to me, gone to the effort of putting a barn owl box up, managing their habitat for barn owls. And then because I'm a ringer, we can get, and I have a Schedule 1 disturbance license as well for barn owls. You know, we can get the chicks down, we ring the chicks, we do all the biometrics, but actually then I make sure those farmers hold those barn owl chicks. And, you know, it's me saying to them, you know, you did this, you put the box up, you created the habitat, you created this barn owl chick, you know, these barn owls are breeding because of you. And imagine what else you could do if you put your mind to it. You know, the support is all there to do it. There is a public will to do it. And you actually have the power to deliver this. You know, let's talk about yellowhammers. Let's talk about linnet. Let's talk about great crested newts. Let's talk about ponds. You know, and all of a sudden, I think with the barn owls and people actually see that kind of, you know, the chick kind of gazing back at them, you know, it kind of just strikes a bit of a chord. And it makes people realize that it actually isn't as hard as it's made out to be sometimes, you know, and all that farmer bashing in the press. We can turn some of that around if we just kind of do the right things. So for me, barn owls are a brilliant hook for people just to get involved and do something, because it's actually, we can affect their whole life cycle. Yeah. And it's something that's actually really rather simple. If they're there in that area, you only need a nesting site and food, you know, the rest of it kind of takes care of itself. With these species, if we get the habitat right, then, you know, everything works. I always say to people, build it and they will come. You know, if you get the habitat right for farmland wildlife, it will respond. And that's why, you know, this is so pleasing, because it comes, sometimes it is just as simple as that.
Yeah.
And how important do you think it is to engage with the public, particularly at the moment? And what stories or messages do you think that farmers should be telling or could be telling right now?
Right. For us, it's critically important that we're engaging with the public. But not that we're telling them what to do or how to decide or how to make their shopping choices. It's let's show them that we can do things that are good for the natural environment, are good, wholesome food that is actually good for them. And let's do it in a way where, you know, we're getting people to understand what it is that we do. So it's not going on the telly and saying, you must buy British because our farmers need you. It's actually, you know, it's when I have all the I had all the school children from Gislingham School come out, and we actually looked at where our food comes from and how we grow it. And then we looked at, I got them all to open our barn owl pellets and look at what the barn owls were eating. I said, look, this is as important to me as growing this food. And it's about sowing the seeds of that whole farm ecosystem and sowing the seeds that actually British farming can produce food, can produce a yield of wildlife. It can do all the things that we really want it to. And it's winning hearts and minds, not telling people what they should be doing, because telling people doesn't really get us anywhere. You know, we just need to show people that we are part of the solution and what we're doing is right. And I think if we know we're doing it right with real confidence, we'll take people along on that journey with us.
Yeah, no, definitely. You're actually a case study in the report. And in your section, you mention achieving your farm's maximum sustainable output. What do you mean by that? And how do you measure it and ultimately achieve it?
maximum sustainable output, MSO, is it's a concept that the Nature Friendly Farming Network have been working on for a little while. And it's just, it's about finding that sweet spot between all the things that we are fortunate enough to be working with that are given to us, like rain and sunshine and good fertile soil. And it's actually, how do we use all those things so they benefit us rather than actually working against them? And for us as an arable farm, it's been tricky because it's a completely different concept to what we've ever looked at in the past. And you know, we're still very much down the, you know, we can only grow crops with fertilizer. And you know, we're trying to get out of that mindset. And MSO, you know, fertilizer is about the worst thing when it comes to MSO. And we're not saying we don't need it or we can't do without it, but it's actually, we need to be looking at how we work the natural balance in association to incorporate it into that. You know, so it's making sure that we've got the right rotation to make sure we've got, you know, those nitrogen fixing plants in a rotation. We make sure we've got cover crops, so we're actually using the residual nitrogen, so with everything we put on, we're not wasting it. And then it's just, for us, it's been a really interesting comparison between our MSO analysis, our farm carbon survey that was done, and also our end of year accounts, because they all seem to point us in the same direction, which is sprays and fertilizers are expensive, okay, damaging, yeah, polluting, and yeah, you know, it's all of a sudden it became about the business and the farming and the MSOs. It kind of fitted into that rather than just this kind of crazy concept that no one understands all these acronyms. It was this is something that, if we look at it in as a one of the tools in the toolkit, it serves a real purpose. When you read MSO, it makes your head spin because it is very confusing. And I think if you think about it in the context of a dairy farm, you know, it's about just about getting your stocking numbers appropriate to the amount of grazing land you have and the amount of feed you want to use, and making everything fit together. And then it's taking that principle and applying it. For us, it's applying it into an arable setting, which makes a lot more sense the more you understand it and learn about it.
So just taking those trends that you've been noticing, how do you bring all this together, and what are your plans, yours and Brian's plans for the business in future?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do, probably starting almost as soon as we get off this podcast, is I'm going to start prepping for our farm business review, which we're doing as part of DEFRA's future funding farm resilience pot. Because for me, having free business analysis, looking at how we are stronger going into the future, I can't understand why everyone's not doing it and people aren't knocking the doors down. So that would be my first thought for everyone is, you know, there's advice out there. Let's actually use it to make sure we are building these businesses to be as strong as we possibly can, because farming's going to be a lot harder, different, yeah, pressures, different priorities. And the way we've always done it just isn't going to cut it anymore. So for us, we've been using, and we're going to keep using this time whilst we still have a BPS system in place, to just keep honing our skills, you know, making sure that what we're doing works, and let's learn new things. And when ELMS is rolled out, and actually we're under a bit of pressure because maybe we might be under payment by results, or you know, some of the conditions might be different, we actually want to be right at the top of our game so we know exactly what we're doing, so we're in the best position to deliver these schemes when they come out, and crudely take all the money that's available rather than just some of it, because we don't know what we're doing, or because we haven't got our farming system right. So that's kind of our short and medium term. But also then it's about getting everything on the farm working as hard as it can. And that's all our buildings. It's making sure that every building is being used or generating an income. I've also got another diversification project, which fits in with everything we're doing. I'm not going to give it away because someone else might steal that idea, but I'm hoping that
What do you mean?
that might be something that that gets moves on at a great speed fairly soon. So linking it, tying all those things we do together. We're also looking at a cluster as well, you know, trying to get a farm cluster off the ground, because I think landscape scale conservation over farmland is something that's going to be critical. It's critical for biodiversity, it's critical for species recovery, but actually also if we want to be hitting those money pots, we've got to be working together, working on a bigger scale. And I don't think there'll ever be a time in the future when we have to pay to do conservation work if it has real benefit. But I think we need to be looking at the mechanisms, how we access that money. And, you know, that's good for farmers. It's not me saying, you know, we must be going out there and begging people for money. It's actually saying, you know what, it's good for our business, because through the winter, we know we can be out there cleaning out ponds. We can be doing really good work. And if we've got it funded, you know, it just makes this whole business idea work a lot better. We've got another project on the go, one of our neighbouring farms, which is a whole farm environmental stewardship scheme. It's a 30-acre farm, and we've taken the whole farm out of production and put it down to environmental stewardship scheme options. And I'm trying to build a demonstration farm in there to show that, you know, a farm at 30 acres, maybe there is another way that we can be farming, and we can be seeing real environmental benefits and taking the risk out of farming. So that's something that we're working on as well, and we have really good engagement with the NGOs with that and some other projects. So that's something that we're kind of looking at as well, for something as we move forwards. And for us, there's a few children kicking about as well now. So it's actually making sure that we go home at the end of the day, and we're home in sensible time. Yeah, and, yeah, you know, the priorities change. And if we can run a business that means that the whole way through not in harvest and not in the drilling season, the rest of the time we can be doing the school runs, and, you know, we can actually spend some family time. That's really important as well. So there's a lot there to be looking at, I think, and it's good for everyone if we're looking at the future in a positive and sensible way.
I couldn't agree. I was going to ask you when you find time to sleep, but if you've got young children, you probably don't, if you're like me.
See, Patrick is one of those people who makes me feel lazy.
I have a very unique knack of looking busy all the time when sometimes I'm really not, and at other times I just wander around, people think, what on earth is he doing, and my brain just going around. It's ultimately about having businesses that work, and the rest of it all fits together after that.
Sure. Finally then, Patrick, and we're gonna ask every guest the same question throughout this series, and I'm really interested to see how they interpret the question actually, but what does rethink farming mean to you?
Rethink farming for me is actually looking at the industry and changing our perception of output. You know, it's how do we tick all the boxes that the policymakers want us to deliver? And I think those boxes are different to what it was 10 years ago, 25 years ago, 50 years ago. It's about looking at how can viable, sustainable, thriving, maybe even successful farming businesses, how can we deliver food or whatever the products for the marketplace are that the policy wants us to produce? And that might not be what we think it is. You know, it might be environmental goods, it might be education, it might be food. It's getting away from this kind of this real narrow way of looking at what we produce in terms of it has to come out of a combine. And I think it's making sure that farmers, landowners, whoever it is who's managing that land, are open-minded to what the future wants us to deliver.
Fantastic. Well, that's all we have time for. But a massive thank you, Patrick, for coming on the show and being our first guest of Series 3. Thank you for listening to this first episode of the new series. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't already, and do leave us a comment. It does help with sharing the message. We'll be back in a fortnight when we'll be talking all about soil, everyone's favourite subject. So it's goodbye for now, and we'll see you all next time.